Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. This is John Kane, and I am joined by Nate Funk. Nate, how's it going?
Pretty good. And you?
Oh, not too bad. I just got off of work and sitting down and talking to a friend about certain topics before doing chores for the night. Got a little bit of rain today, so been dealing with that.
We just a few minutes ago just dealt with a top familiar event for many farms. Dairy goat farms. Fox just got out. So I had to corral them and get them put back. Actually put them in the barn for the evening. So
got to make sure that wire is hot, my friend.
It is. But we have a guy who's he's just got to get a good clipping. Got to clip him down one more time.
That way he feels it when he hits the fence.
Yes.
So, Nate, I'm good friends with you. You know, I've known you for over a year now. But, you know, obviously the listeners don't know you as well as they may know me. So let's you know, learn a thing or two about you and your farm. So, let's start out with, you know, farm name and, you know, what you guys are breeding and what you're doing.
Well, my wife, Jen, and I have a half barn farm dairy goats. We breed American and purebred Oberhausli. We've been showing now for about 3 or 4 years as a family. Both my wife and I actually met showing goats back now 20 years ago. And
showing our age.
yep. I grew up with a herd, my father's herd, and my wife was in 4-H with Sonnens. Now, when I was in 4-H, I had Oberhausli's, but my family had what was considered all the breeds at the time, back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. I got to show a variety of breeds, get to compete against some gorgeous animals, got to travel around a bit with it too.
So you guys had all of the breeds, but you came back to the Oberhausli, huh?
Yes, yeah. And we love the personality, the quiet. not saying anything about many of the other breeds. We felt that they were a fun project. We love the style, we love the color, we love the personality.
You can't beat the very docile personality of an Oberhausli, even though, you know, as we say that, you said earlier today you were chasing around bucks that got out. So,
I say that, and I point out that, you know, my 8 and 10 year old helped corral them and bring them back into the barn.
This is true. If the littles can help bring the bucks that got out back in the pen or in the barn, then they're a docile breed.
Right. Well, and you know, we got our boys are well enough mannered that, you know, you talk to them and they, you know, can't come back in on their own.
Right.
The one that, you know, the main one that got out, honestly, he was happy. He was just on the other side of the fence grazing. So grass is greener on the other side, I guess, and
Oh yeah, I mean,
it may not have been greener, but it was smaller.
Exactly. And I mean, as you know, my wife Tierney and I, we raise Oberhausli and Nigerian dwarves, and I'll tell you, I love the Nigerian dwarves' personality, but when it comes to bucks, nothing beats an Oberhausli, because those Nigerian dwarf bucks, he jumped a 4-foot window just to try to get to some does one day. I mean, nothing's keeping them in, and they don't sit there and wait for you to call their name for them to come back. He's gone.
So I
definitely agree with you as far as the Oberhasli breed characteristic goes, when it comes to personality, for sure. So you guys have purebred and American. Yes. Are you guys going to be adding anything else to that, or are you guys sticking with that?
Right now, we're going to just stick with that. We want to hone in on certain traits and qualities that we want to see improved in our herd, you know, and in general. You know, it's like some other breeders around the country, we've got specific things that bother us about the breed. Not in all herds, but, you know, and, you know, some herds have conquered those issues, not conquered, but have addressed them.
Right.
So we're looking to do that.
I definitely think you guys have brought in some different genetics. You know, we won't get too deep down the rabbit hole of which genetics are playing in your herd, but I think you guys have gone out and sought out some genetics to help with what you're wanting to improve.
Right. And you know, some of them are well-known ones, and some are the herd may be known, but the buck himself isn't. So it's interesting. And there are some bucks which we'll talk in other times,
mm-hmm.
that may not be on everybody's radar, but there's a few breeders who know of him, that we get into the whole AI business.
And
make improvements there.
And when we get to that topic, you're definitely going to be walking me through it, because as you know, I bought my first tank this year and I'm actually going to your place to pick it up, hopefully later this month. So
yes.
you'll be the Jedi Master when it comes to me asking questions about AI, because I am quite wet behind the ears when it comes to that topic.
Well, I tend to be, I think anyone who does AI generally agree that you're constantly learning. The one thing to do with AI is to keep a journal of what you did and when, and whether it was successful or not. It's always a learning experience.
I feel like anytime I talk to somebody that uses artificial insemination in their breeding program, They always call it a game of Russian roulette. It's going to happen, you know. It could be, there's so many variables at play. It's not a live buck that's just doing its job. It's a vial of semen that could be from the 80s, you know. And if it's viable, who knows, you know, unless you really test it and look underneath the microscope. But it's definitely something that you gotta be careful with. And man, I would be lying if I didn't say I was nervous for the first time that I'm gonna have to do it. And I don't even have my tank home yet.
yeah, it's I wouldn't call it Russian roulette. I'd say it's more like it is certainly a game of chance. That's so many variables in it. And you just got to do what you can to reduce the variables, or to reduce the impact of the variables. And if you're lucky, it can work out for you. We had a breeding that on paper should have produced these gorgeous kids. And it did produce gorgeous kids, except, they were born from a doe who was extremely wide between the hocks,
mm-hmm.
and they were born hockey, you know, and in the show ring, we don't like our hockey animals.
I don't like them in my barn, let alone the show ring.
But, you know, there were traits about these kids that probably other people would have found desirable, but we didn't. In the intro, we, you know, sent them down the road.
Right, and that's
a thing that we probably won't try again, at least on that dough.
Right.
Again, it's a learning process.
Right, so. And you know, I want to make sure that people know at home that we're not sitting here saying that we're professionals at what we're doing. We're still learning, especially myself. It's something that I haven't been doing for, you know, generations. This is something that I've picked up as a dairy farm kid, you know, with Holsteins way back in the day and barely at that. And, you know, so what we're saying isn't final. And we definitely have our own preferences. Everybody's going to have their own preference of what they want in their barn. So I just don't want the listeners to feel alienated as far as that goes. But yeah, so the kids, you know, genetics are fickle. And the AI that should have been, and I know which one you're talking about, and it should have been, it just didn't work out this certain time because, again, genetics are fickle.
Right. And the other thing you say, you talk about your background, and the irony I have, that Jen and I both have, is we're relatively new to showing this. You know, this go around, meaning that, you know, we walk into a show someplace and the old timers who've been doing it for 20 or 30, 40 years know us by name, yet the people who've been doing it for a long time of 15, you know, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
Have no idea who we are and we're new to them, but yet the old timers don't know us, you know.
Yeah.
And we talk and we don't know the herds that have been around for 15-20 years, but we do know the herds that established the foundation of the breed,
right?
So you know, it's, you know, I grew up where, you know, there were, you know, for Oberhasli, you know, Bill Ostrander Vivian Proctor and Dorothea Custer, they were calling my father's house because my father was an active director.
Right.
And they, you know, so it wasn't uncommon to have encounters with those people. And, you know, Sam Whiteside and people who were involved years ago, decades ago. And yet I'm having to learn who people are now, you know.
But isn't that fun? Like, I kind of enjoy being the new guy in the ring. You know, obviously, you've seen me at shows. My wife kindly calls me the mayor, where I have to go and say hi to all the different people that I know or people that I know on Facebook but haven't met in person. I kind of like being the new guy. I kind of like the fact that, you know, unfortunately not all the time, but, you know, sometimes it's fun being the new person. And turning people's heads saying, who's that? Because they have a nice, decent goat in the ring. But I also, I like the fact with the goat community, especially that people like, you know, the Donna Pierces or Michael Binions or, you know, I'm just saying that because obviously I know a lot of Oberhasli. I feel like they're, even though they're the old crop that have been there and done that, they're still willing to, you know, welcome you with open arms and give you their opinion. I kind of like being the new guy.
Yeah, it's neat and it's interesting and it's
cool that you get to see it both ways.
Being kind of the new guy, but people then still say, "Hey, don't I know your dad?"
Yeah, yeah, it's cool that you. Get
and
that
then
both
I
got to
be careful because. Right, but then I've got to be careful because it's kind of like, well, yeah, what do you think about him?
Yeah, does he owe you money?
There might be some people. Yeah, do you like him? Do you not like him?
Yeah, exactly.
And at the same time, you know, many people, you know, have good memories of him, you know, one way or the other.
Right.
And he could be a jokester in the show ring. sometimes. So, yeah, and other times I know, you know, you could, you know, other stories. yeah, no, it's fun. It's interesting. It's good being the new guy. At the same time, you know, it's just good to be back in the show thing.
Oh, it is. This year especially is killing me that I can't be in the ring as much as I'd like. I did get to venture out to one show where we did okay. You know, it was a hot day, so the doughs looked hot and everybody was hot. But at the end of the day, it just felt good to be in the ring, regardless if we got a ribbon or not. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to hopefully in the future being able to continue showing. And we'll touch on that in a couple minutes. So you're Half Barn Farm, and the listeners might like to hear, you know, I think we started talking on Facebook. I messaged you out of the blue asking you advice about a buck I was about to purchase, right?
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to purchase Orion, my, buck from out in Minnesota. And I thought I knew which I was choosing between him and his twin, and they both out of, you know, the same dam, and she was a first freshener. So I wanted to really get someone's opinion, making sure that my eye was where I thought it should be. I didn't want to make a mistake. This was a big purchase and jump for our program. Searching out something that wasn't, you know, from the 30-mile radius, of New York that I was used to. So I think I messaged you. I know I messaged another big breeder too, and asked for your input. And man, we just kind of clicked right away.
Yep. Yes. Yes. And I think the first time we actually physically met was at the Altamont Buck Show.
Yeah. Yep. And you got to meet Orion.
Right. Brought Orion to show and to kick butt and
he did okay that day. Your animals were, I think, only one ring. He was ahead of your junior bucks that you had there, which you had a billion of them.
Well, I brought enough to make sure things were official.
Smart move. I don't blame you.
Some years it can be hard trying to get enough animals to make things official, and
right,
you know, nobody wants to go to a show and go and get, well, I mean, some people might, but to go to a show and be the only one there and not have enough to earn a championship,
right? And, you know, and
make it a little sweet if you get that leg.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's funny because we also have the Nigerians, and never ever, even if I just had Nigerians, would I be like, man, I hope this makes official. Like, everybody, they always come out in force. So, I mean, even at that buck show, I brought mine, and I mean, there had to be at least 30 Nigerians there.
Yeah.
I mean, there was quite a few.
And then the Obis are usually at about 9 or 10.
Yeah, it's always messaging friends that are hemming and hawing about going to the show. Trying to make it official, you know, messaging them, hey, come on to this show, please bring so-and-so. And it's always a gamble when you're driving there to the show. Cause you know, you don't know if somebody's going to scratch, and you get to the show and you're like at check-in, you're like, are we official? And they say, yes. You're like, all right, good. I haven't had to go the other way yet, but I think last year at the Progressive Dairy Goat Show, we were close. But again, you guys pulled through and brought a bunch.
And over Hudley's, I was going to say, and we ended up bringing the herd and only showing.
It was the junior show, I think, that was light.
Right.
Because one of the other breeders wasn't going to stay for it.
Right. And so we brought all our juniors. Mm-hmm. The danger in that was at that point, all but two of ours had dry legs. And so we're really trying not to show our juniors because, yeah,
what's the point? Let somebody else get the leg.
Junior showing and getting another dry leg when, you know,
when somebody else could easily get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we ended up, I think we chose those that we didn't think were would have gotten it. And I think in the end, you know, the other exhibitor did come through with enough juniors to make it official. Mm-hmm. And we just had to show the three or four that we wanted to show.
Yeah.
And, but in that day, it ended up being a long haul for everybody because we ended up bringing all our milkers and all our juniors mm-hmm. to make sure things were official.
Right.
Because no one was sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was the morning of for that show. And that's the thing about these small local shows that, you know, you think everybody's going to turn out for. And sometimes, you know, unfortunately in New York, a lot of these shows are in July and August. And that's hot time, especially down in the Hudson Valley where I'm at. I mean, I know it's hot up there towards you, but, you know, some days you get blessed with a 70 degree day. But I mean, a lot of people don't want to, you know, be in the heat all day. And I don't blame them, especially last year. That was a hot day. But, you know, I also feel bad because a lot of people don't realize that my Oberhasli looking goats, you know, 3/4 of them are recorder grades. So I get messages all the time. Hey, come to this show. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I only have recorder grades that I'd be bringing, and maybe one American. And everybody just, oh man, come on, John. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm getting there. We're breeding up to American, but not yet.
Well, we're working on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be adding another American shortly into the herd. So that'll give us some more numbers. And then, you know, we did the herd book change on my one recorder grade doe. So that'll make another one American. So we're getting there. Oh, hey, there's, you know, there's three in the barn right now.
That counts.
Yeah. So you got your start with showing goats with 4-H with your family, right? And yep. Same goes with Jen, your wife.
Yep.
And you guys had, I didn't realize you guys were showing everything. I thought you guys just had a couple different breeds.
No. So the herd was Shenango Hills. Mm-hmm. And back in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s, we had everything. Alpine, La Mancha, Nubian, Oberhasli, Sonnens, Togs, and, you know, of course, grapes.
Right.
And my father at the time, he did not believe in going to a show and only taking a few animals. So if we went to a show, it was usually a large trailer and the truck.
Oh, so you guys brought the whole herd?
The truck and the milkers and trailer.
Wow.
Yeah. And, well, we'd bring a sampling of the herd.
Okay.
You know, we'd show up with 20 or 30 animals, but the other, you know.
I mean, that's substantial, 40, though. Yeah.
Boom. We had anywhere from 50 to 70 animals. In the barn. And then, you know, during kidding season, of course, more, but, you know, kidding season numbers erupt. So, you know, there are some does who are memorable and we competed against all kinds of animals and saw some really great does in time of showing. Some of them purely by chance, and others were, you know, we knew we were going to be competing against them. Mm-hmm. You know, Elkmont Fair, the riders would normally be there. You know, if they didn't have Madame Raz there, they'd have one of her daughters or granddaughters there from the Sunkiss line. You know, State Fair, that was where the Glory Run was, meaning, you know, people would, Bill Poole had his son in there, Yule, you know, Chris McCary and Alan Bitter would have their La Mancha there. You know,
See, that's so crazy that you guys got the show against all the big names back in the day in New York and surrounding states, and you got to compete against them because you guys had everything.
Yeah. I mean, we saw those, and some of the things were it was really cool. And many of these are animals that you look in the pedigrees now of some of the top animals, and some of these animals are in those pedigrees. And it's like, I remember seeing that, Nubians, goodness, I don't know of a Nubian. There aren't very many Nubians out there that don't have Frosty Marvin.
See, I'm not even a Nubian guy and I know that name,
I have the irony of living here in Norwich, New York, not far from Green, where Joan Elliott had the Dayspring herd, and a line that's since gone. But, at the same time, we've got, up an hour and a half away, you got Scotchbriar, and good lines there, as well as a local herd here, Critter Country, which is the Abrams family.
Okay.
So
yeah, so you guys got a lot around you. I mean, I'm kind of locked away in my part of Orange County, New York, where. Really, there's not any showing herds around me besides across the river in Dutchess County, where there's quite a few different herds out that way. But, as far down Hudson Valley that we are, we're really it. There's a farm that's got, some actual, it has a dairy where they sell raw milk, but they're not, showing or anything. They're just, running their business.
Right.
So it's neat that, you've got people, right around you that, really have impacted different breeds in the Northeast. And we'll definitely touch on at a later date, differences between, Eastern states and Western and Central states throughout the country. And, I'm sure there'll be different topics on different breeds as such. So let's move on. We've gone through, everybody knows pretty much, who we are now, at least a little taste. And, throughout the future episodes, they'll learn more about us. So let's touch on some American Dairy Goat Association news. People will hear us refer to it as ADGA just because it's a lot shorter to say, not as much of a mouthful. And this year, there's quite a bit, different things going on. And most of what's going on within the registry is due to COVID-19 and the effects on the registry. The national show got canceled. Of course, everybody knows that over in Grand Island, Nebraska, which is a shame. I know a lot of people are getting, worked up for that. It's in June. So when did they cancel that, Nate? Was that back in May? March that they canceled it? Or was it May?
Yeah, actually back in I'd have to look it up, but I believe actually, no, you're right, March or April.
It was either late March or early April, but still only a couple months away from the show. So yeah. I'm sure a lot of people had already, dumped a lot of money into all the different rigors that you have to go through to enter, into those shows as far as like vaccinations and testing and all that stuff goes for your herd. I wasn't planning on going to that show. I know a couple people in Maine were going with their Nigerians, and it was going to be their first national show. So, that's definitely a bummer. But the nice thing is the next show's in Louisville, right?
Yeah.
Next year. So that's a little bit closer for some of the people in the Northeast that we're going to trek all the way out to Nebraska. Unfortunately for the people out towards Nebraska, it's a much bigger haul. So, you know, but the thing with those shows is, you know, it's not like you can just, you know, postpone it till next year. You know, they hold those venues in advance for years in advance.
Right. Exactly. Well, and that's kind of, you know, your next topic, which will end up being a convention. That's a similar thing. Is it's not like you can just postpone convention to next year sort of thing.
Right. And so we're talking about the convention in Syracuse.
Correct. Which also got canceled.
Yeah.
But no, for me, the bummer on the Nebraska Nationals was Nebraska was almost like, if you could have thrown a dart at smack dab middle of the United States, it's as close as you could have gotten. And, you know, it was going to be a unique opportunity, at least for those of us watching it, to see a lot of the top herds converging right there.
Right. That I was thinking the same thing. You know, a ton of different herds that would never really meet unless they travel, you know, to shows.
Right.
And it would have been cool to see them at like an even keel basis.
Exactly. And I don't just mean the Overhuts. I mean, other breeds, you know, Todd.
Oh, yeah.
All these other breeds. And it would have been a unique opportunity for people to see and to see how those herds at this point right now rank against each other, or hold up against each other. So it was really frustrating that got canceled. And unfortunately with these things is they, as you said, they can't postpone them because the amount of work and effort and organization that goes into established for doing that 1 week of activity that specific year, it takes 2, maybe even 3, maybe even 4 years of advanced work, you know, getting the venues, getting the contracts lined up, getting judges, getting everything lined up for that 1 week, and then for it to be canceled. Really, 1 year's time is not enough time to scramble and go, we'll do it next year, same place.
Right.
Because also many of these venues have already reserved that week next year to somebody else.
Exactly. You know, I work for facilities for an athletic department for a collegiate institute, and we also do concerts here and there. And honestly, with just a concert that's a one-night thing, we like to have at least 6 months in advance. A lot of, you know, there's been a couple times where it's been less than that. But that's a one-night event that we're looking for 6 months. Now imagine a week where you have all these different moving parts.
Which is, you know, if you then look at the convention and it being canceled, why that happened, you know. Now, you know, some people will bemoan and say, well, but now New York is, you know, beyond, well, we're in phase four or whatever is after. And, you know, why did it get canceled? Well, we're looking at other parts of the country are different stages of infection or recovery. Yes.
There's some that are just hopping out.
Right. But that's to say, by the way, you know, whether or not you believe in what's happening or not, you know, really we don't know that much about this disease.
Yes.
Even, you know, the doctors. And that's why, you know, Monday, you know, Dr. Fauci might say one thing. By Friday, he's saying, whatever I said Monday's wrong. And it's because we're still learning about this. It's so much unknown, whether or not you believe in it or not, whether you think it's a political thing or whether you think it's actually a life or death situation. We have to think that these government bodies that are kind of trying to move through this are just kind of they're trying to play it safe. It's better to play safe than to be robbed. Yeah. You know,
well, you know, like you said, you know, everybody's coming from all over the country to these conventions every year. And this is, you know, ADCA's a not-for-profit, right? Yeah. So imagine the liability to have, you know, something's going to happen, you know, with all those unknowns of where people are coming from. And, you know, it's, you know, it would be almost impossible to sit there and test everybody and let them sit there for a couple hours waiting on the results before they enter the building. There's just no way.
Oh no.
So, you know, regardless of how people feel about COVID and, you know, what's going on with this crazy world of ours, it's, you know, you gotta walk on eggshells with it. It's just, there's so many variables.
And again, we're so unknown with what actually going on. So, but you know, with the Nebraska Nationals, I would have loved to have seen some of those signing shows. I'd love to have seen
Todd shows. You're not kidding. Oh,
Over Hosley's, of course, because we're both Over Hosley breeders. I mean, mm-hmm. You had pretty much, I think, every talking to a bunch of the breeders I know, pretty much every major Over Hosley breeder in the country was going to be there. It was going to be a real good show.
Yeah.
We'll have to see if it pans out for Louisville now. You know, will these same breeders go to Louisville?
Well, I think if we're at that stage of, you know, the country being, you know, finally, you know, at some sort of level of normalty with the COVID, I think if Louisville's on and everything's okay enough to be able to go to that show and be comfortable, I honestly think it's going to be game on. I think everybody's going to be chomping at the bit.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. Yeah, if only could have our own news network for it, though, to block it from ESPN of ADCA. No trademark there. Credit to
hey, they have video games on ESPN now. Why can't we have goat shows?
Exactly. So, anyway.
So. Yeah, so, I mean, with COVID, a ton of local shows have been either canceled or some have been postponed or, you know, they've gone on as is, depending on the states that they were. I know there was one in Troy, Pennsylvania. There was one down south in Georgia before everything got crazy.
Yep.
And there was one in Massachusetts.
Well, and there's an interesting one for you.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be one in New York, in Norwich. It's a restricted show, though, because through New York State Ag and Markets, you cannot have a show or exhibition where the exhibitors are coming from outside your COVID management unit.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, so like, it's in Shenango County, but to show at it, you have to be from, you know, Cortland, Madison, Otsego, Delaware, Broome County.
Ah, so you're just making sure that you're boxing me out, huh?
Hey, I'm not the one who planned it. It's the New York State Ag and Markets ruling that limits it. And because it's limited to those counties, because it's restricted those entries from those counties, right. It's considered a restricted show through ADCA.
But if you get enough people to come out, and, you know, I'm sure you have 10 Oberhosleys in there waiting to be shown, then that means that you guys could earn some restricted legs.
Which is, okay, not trying to brag here, which is a problem for us. Because all these junior shows and our junior does earn their dry legs, their restricted legs for these junior shows. And so we have a certain number of does who don't have restricted legs. Luckily, we have a senior doe who needs one leg, and a restricted leg would do it, but she's got to go grand first.
So, right. And for everybody at home, restricted legs, while very complicated, easily put, it's if you show a doe in a show where it's restricted to people from certain areas. So say, you know, in this case, you know, Nate's going to have a show and I can't go because I'm from Orange County. Well, that's a restriction, so it's a restricted leg, meaning, you know, they don't put an asterisk or anything once you get the three legs, though, right?
Well, what it is, to become a permanent champion, a doe needs to earn three legs towards a permanent championship. Two of those legs must be an unrestricted championship leg, meaning, you know, over 8 milkers and 10 animals in the breed in an unrestricted show. The third leg can be either another unrestricted leg, which most people generally have, or it can be a restricted leg, or some people refer to it as dry leg, because your dry does usually earn them at, you know, a junior show.
Right. You
know, junior doe show, as many of our doe kids have. But it can also be a championship that was earned at a restricted show, like what they're going to be holding at the end of our month, at the end of the month in our area. We're still kind of not sure personally if we're actually going to go to it. But it's, you know, literally 5 minutes from our house.
That's crazy.
With the trailer. And it would be one day truck in, truck out.
Well, I wouldn't assume you would bring them in the back of the cab of your truck. That'd be too hot.
Not again. Not ever. That once. To get on the fairgrounds, they said everyone's got a temperature scan and answer.
It's usually three questions. Have you been outside of the country? Yep. Have you been in contact? And do you have any symptoms? Yeah.
Right. You have to answer those and have your temperature read. And then you have to sign a waiver. Mm-hmm. And then you're allowed on the fairgrounds.
Right.
And you do your showing and you leave. And that's how the show is supposed to go. We're still watching numbers and seeing how numbers go.
Which is, I mean, you guys have, you know, littles at home that, you know, you've got to make sure everybody is being safe, and even yourselves and, you know, your wife. It's
exactly.
You know, I went to the Sunny Sisters show in Massachusetts, and, you know, it was face mask required when you're in the ring or around the ring, if you're ringside. And I mean, it was hot, but I didn't really see anybody not abide by the rules. I mean, some of those Nigerian classes, it got a little bit iffy because there were so many Nigerians. I mean, there had to be 100 of them. And, you know, but still, you know, people were being respectful. They were wearing their masks. You know, even the judges were wearing their mask in the ring, you know, using hand sanitizer. I brought 2 bottles of disinfectant for them, and, you know, ran pretty smooth. And, you know, I know people are going to feel different about how the shows should or should not be ran. There was a huge stink when they were debating it. I remember, you remember, Nate, when the board was voting on if they were going to allow sanctioned shows or not.
Yes.
And
that was, I know a lot of people have argued that back and forth. And I think that one was not a desire of the directors who were proposing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a out of precaution, you know, whether or not AdCap was going to be liable. And, you know, that's something, you know, that they as directors have to consider. Yes, they've got to think about what we as members want, but at the same time, they have to think about what's best for the association.
Right. You know, like I said, it's not for profit. If a big lawsuit were to come at them and, you know, heaven forbid they lost, you know, that's a big chunk of change most likely out of their pocket. And it's hard for them to recoup the amount of money they must have lost with you know, convention and the national show being canceled. Must have been tremendous.
Well, and sanction fees and all these shows which are canceled. So, it is. So, and that's a hard one. And I guess they've got another hard one, again, COVID-related, coming up. That they're voting on, I think, the deadline's tomorrow on the judge's license.
Yes, the judge's license, which any licenses for that would be expiring this year, they would extend for a year, right? But
only the ones expiring this year.
Right. So it wouldn't be, so say yours expires next year, you have to go to training conference, and then it's really going to kind of gum up the works, I think. I feel, at least. I mean,
I can see what they're worried about is, if you give everybody a free year, I mean, why give everybody a free year?
But most of them are sitting on their palms right now because there's no shows to judge.
Well, and that's where a lot of the people that I've seen on Facebook have argued, and many of them are respected judges, and many are directors, and many are members at large who just feel that give it to everybody, not just the ones expiring this year. Give everybody a pass year.
Yeah. You know, I mean, with those overlapping, it would be heavy, you know, classes. There'd be a lot of people.
Well, I was going to say, someone threw out the number of 46, you know, instead of having normal 23 people going through it, you'd have like 46.
Yeah,
you'd almost have to double up on the training conference. You'd have to split it just so that they got enough coverage.
Right.
And that would be a lot of money in itself.
Exactly.
So I know that there are some directors who have already voiced their vote. One of them being one of our New York directors.
Yep.
I agree. It's not the ideal solution. For the ones who are expiring this year, it should be everybody. Just bump everybody.
Yes.
I mean, what is it going to change if you just bump everybody other than just one group? And it's not a making it fair or not fair. It's just it would make it problematic otherwise.
Right, and heaven forbid that this COVID stuff is not under control, but it's in a controlled environment where you could have 23 people separated in training, you know, next year. But to have 46 people, that's another cog in the machine, where you're having to juggle more people. If it was just to all be pushed, then there's not going to be an issue. I don't want to say it comes down to money, but at the same time, they're probably thinking they've already gotten hit with quite a loss with national show and convention, not to get hit with, I don't know how much the training conference costs these judges, but I know it's not cheap.
I know I would imagine that's probably a factor that the committee that proposed this considered is, while it's a nonprofit, Adget itself needs revenue.
Yeah.
You know, it does need some kind of revenue.
Luckily, we can still register our goats.
We should be thankful for that.
Because, I mean, there's more breeders than ever every year. So at least they're pulling in some kind of revenue. Now, is it to make, you know, everything not go in the red? Probably not. But it helps.
Yeah.
You know, look at all those Nigerian dwarves being registered every year.
Well, and thankfully we have the online registry.
Yes.
You can register online. But, you know, as far as this judge's licensing recommendation in the current postal ballot. If I'm reading everything right, they're due tomorrow. So we should know sometime this week.
By the time this is posted, they should have voted on it. And probably by the next show, we'll be talking about how it was settled.
Yes.
If it was settled.
And how it'll impact things going forward.
Yes. So yeah, so we got that. You know, hopefully they figure out what they're going to do. And hopefully it's with the members, or not really the members in mind, sure, but more the judges in mind. You know, I just think 46 people in one room would be just a little bit much. So they got that. And another big thing that's going on, hopefully, my farm, and I know you guys will be doing it this year because you do it every year, but one thing that everybody is gearing up for is buck collection. Some people probably out west have already done it. And, you know, really for us in New York, it's this fall, October. I'm hoping to take part in it. I have a baby on the way, so we'll see. The baby is supposed to be due 3 days after the collection, so it's a little tight.
Yeah, unless she goes late.
The worst thing that could happen is I get a phone call, you know?
You know, you're going to want to be at nearby. Here, we're I know that currently our city organization is trying to organize a buck collection with Kapurgia. We're moving through the area near the end of October.
I think yours is Cornell, right?
It usually is Cornell. Unfortunately, because of the COVID,
they are
to find a different location.
Mm.
A few brooders are proposing their own farmsteads or an off-site location.
Right.
I know then, you know, B&D is going down to Danielle's.
Yes, over at King's Rock Farm. Yep. They're going there. And I believe, because I did speak to her last week, because I realized what the dates were, and I was like, oh, no. but I believe how they're handling it right now, and this is, you know, up in the air with all the COVID stuff, is it's going to be like a week out before they're like, okay, this is when, you know, this is your time slot. How many do you have to get collected type deal? So we'll see.
You go up and you get, bring your bucks off the vehicle and you get them collected.
Yep.
Either of these, realize both of them are usually transporting semen from other parts of the country. It's a great time to stock your semen tank. You know, John, you got an empty one to fill up.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know a few bucks already that are in Kapurgia's tanks. Mm-hmm. I've seen a bit of what's in B&D's tanks.
And B&D's still adding, B&D. I believe, too.
Well, they're adding, and I think part of them doing the collections is how they're adding.
Right.
There's that. As far as, you know, we're going to probably try to get out to B&D. We did Kapurgia the last couple of years. They're nice guys, the friendly guys. We just want to see how B&D downstairs. You know, other thing that's kind of, you know, in our back pocket is, you know, Jen went through and did the training for doing our own collection. We might try that on a couple guys just to see.
And did she have the training already?
Yes. Yes.
Oh. So you guys are good.
We are. And do our own collection on our own bucks.
Mm-hmm. Good. So I can just call you guys up if I don't make buck collection. Great.
In the future. This year or next, we're only doing our own bucks just because as far as I can see, it's almost just like AI itself. It's a lot of variables. And you got to get that, you know, that's one of the many variables of AI is you got to get a quality jump. You got, you know, quality semen. And then it's got to be preserved in a quality way, so that when it's thawed 20 years later, that semen is still viable.
Exactly. Yeah, it's definitely going to be, it's like, it's artwork, you know, anything with artificial insemination, whether it's the butt collection of collecting the semen or dispersing it into the dough, it's a work of art, which definitely sounds like it takes a lot of practice.
Nothing, there's not much that beats just having access to the buck you want and letting him breed the doe you want.
Exactly.
And just do that. That's, I mean, you're still going to be wanting to buy those quality bucks, even if you have a semen tank. Just because, you know, Jen has a near 50% success rate last year, and that's considered stellar in this area. And that means half the time she's successful, half the time she's not. If half your does in your herd don't get bred this year, it's going to put a rain on your show season.
So would you call that luck of
draw?
Instead of draw? Huh?
Oh, I saw what you were doing there.
How can I help myself?
So,
yeah, so we're hoping to take part of the collection this year, especially since I have, you know, my yearling buck from Minnesota and now a buck kid from out in Ohio. Both have stellar pedigrees, I think. Yep. And I'd like to get them backed up in the tank, but honestly, you know, baby comes first. So
it does.
If it looks like it's going to be a close call, I'm not going to do it, you know?
And we consider the whole buck collection process like an insurance policy. I mean, we've all got to go to health, got to face it. Fuck,
yeah.
Stupid.
They sure do.
I mean, the first 2-3 years we sold buck kids were, honestly, I was like, oh man, we should have gotten them collected. And one of them, we actually, you know, called people up and said, hey, can we get them collected? We love his sisters and his dam, and, you know, get told, well, you know, he wrapped his neck around the electric cord and hung himself last night. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, well, there goes that idea.
Yeah. My grandpa used to always say there's livestock and then there's dead stock, you know? So yep, if you can prepare for the dead stock and back up those stellar genetics that you brought into your farm, I mean, there's a reason why you're bringing a buck into your program, you know? They're probably an improvement most of the time. And, you know, why not have that insurance just in case, you know, the buck puts his head into the hay feeder and decides his pen mate decides to headbutt him and break his neck. You know, it's the sad parts of farming, but definitely ensure your program and ensure those bucks in the tank.
Exactly.
So that's all for the news this week. You know, with COVID, there's really nothing crazy going on, which is always, you know, a good thing, I guess. Usually this time of year, we're busy clipping goats. I know you were clipping goats today, right?
Actually, we ended up doing different things. We ended up cleaning another pen. We moved some chickens around. We're actually, after this podcast, we're heading out and helping load 900 bales of hay.
Oh, you want me to keep this going for another hour? I mean,
I can talk all day.
I mean... is it not extremely hot there right now? It's like 98 with a real feel of 110 with this humidity right now.
No, it's only about 80 with a stiff breeze. So,
tradesies. I'll load up some hay in that.
Yeah.
So, is there anything else that you wanted to add, Nate?
Not yet. Other than I know you. A lot of people have been thinking about carrying us. And the situation with her buck. I know that there was a large group that gathered together some funds to help with either replacement of her buck or reward for knowledge of what happened to him.
Yes. And that's Carrie Anos of Worth the Weight Farm.
Right. And for those of you who don't know what happened, I would actually recommend going on to Facebook and looking up Worth the Wait Farm. She, quickly put, she had a buck disappear off her property for a few days, and then it reappeared back in his pen, dead.
Deceased, yep.
Yeah, and so someone had taken it and then returned it back to her dead. And so...
Which is just terrible.
Yeah.
So I can't even imagine.
A group of people got together and did some fundraising and got money. Hopefully she'll be able to get a buck for this breeding season.
Yep.
You know, a lot of people have made offers to her. To Terry, we hope things are going better. We hope you find out what happened and, good luck.
Yeah, we're definitely, I mean, I can't even imagine if that happened here. Who would ever think that would happen on their farm? You know, as far as, you know, goat people go, you know, no matter if you have them for pets or for, you know, showing like you and I, you never think it's going to happen to you. And for that to happen to Carrie and I mean, from everything I read, this was a very, very nice buck and must have been if he just let somebody take him or whatever had happened. But we do just want to give you a sincere apology, Carrie, that, you know, hopefully you're able to replace him with something that you want and isn't just a filler. You know, obviously this year will be a little bit different because, you know, we're approaching October whenever they've decided to breed their goats. So I'm very, the one thing that really restored my faith into the goat community was, you know, everybody pulling together. You know, you saw not even just, you know, donating money. You saw people sharing it out the wazoo. I mean, there was people on the West Coast that saw it, you know, and that's really cool that, you know, Facebook and Instagram and everything has brought the community that much closer, you know, right at your fingertips, where I could talk to, you know, somebody out in Iowa right now or California and it'd be a breeze. Yep. So I really am proud of the community, the way they pulled together to help out Carrie. And I just hope that she's able to get what she wants.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
Go ahead.
No. So, otherwise, this week we're looking for those to start coming heat. Our bucks that are now back in the barn are, you know, hopefully, you know, they're getting rested up. We're going to be trying, you know, to get them ready for breeding season.
That's exciting. Well, you know, you have one doe that you're bringing here. So
yes, we do.
I'm excited for that to happen. And yeah, you've got that going on. Anything else crazy going on this week?
Not really. Just kind of trying to get through the heat, try to get to cooler weather.
Yeah.
We'll try to actually get these animals clipped. We've spent a lot of time on Facebook looking at other people's animals all clipped up and ready to show. And our bucks are, you know, 5-6 inch long, hair hanging off them. And our doe kids look like they're running feral. I mean, they get the hooves done, you know, 2-3 times a week, not a week, but 2-3 weeks. But so it's just trying.
It's been a weird year. You know, nobody blames you. Nobody blames you. You know, I mean, I've got my Nigerians. I still have to clip and do their udders. I don't even know what the udders look like underneath all that hair. You know, they look like little togs. So I feel you on that. And I'd rather shave a bunch of Obers than a couple of Nigerians. But I do love them. But, man, they fight you on that stand when you're clipping them. Woof. So, this week, I think, really, I mean, I've got the next couple of weeks, I have a crazy work schedule. But the nice thing is I get out at 4 p.m. instead of 5. So I think I'm going to try to get a couple projects done this week, but mostly projects for getting ready for the baby in October. So,
yeah,
I mean, my goats are pretty much clipped besides the Nigerians, so I can take a couple weeks off before I have to clip them for the website.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think.
Yeah, well, that's our things. We have no good website photos as of right now. So,
I mean, you have good website photos. They're just from last year. Let's be honest.
Well, yeah, and we'll get on that topic another time.
Yes, we will.
Do's and don'ts of website photos.
That's right. Sure. And we'll definitely, I mean, I'm sure I have plenty of don'ts online. So we'll definitely touch on that. Maybe the next one. Who knows? But okay. that said, I think we'll wrap this up. And, you know, Nate, I appreciate you coming on and being my co-host. And hopefully we'll be able to drive this ship together. So
we'll do. Yeah.
So that said, this has been Ringside American Dairy Goat Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. And if you liked it, go ahead and subscribe, favorite us. And, you know, I'm sure I'll share it on Facebook and you can give us some comments on there. So thanks again, Nate. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's been fun.
All right. Bye.